Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos Kuf Mem. We are on Kuf Lametes Amud Beis. We're here on the 20th parak of Masechta Shabbos, and we are continuing our discussion about strainers. The parak opened up on Kuf Lametes Amud Beis regarding the topic of strainers. Machlokes Rebbe Elazar the Chacham and whether or not one can hang a strainer on top of a jug. That may be a violation of Asiyas Ohel, but we learned in the Gemara it's really more a function of Uvda Dechol in terms of why the Chacham prohibited. But in actuality, straining through it, so that's going to be prohibited on Shabbos. Rebbe Elazar allows for the straining it on Yontif. The Chachamim even allow it on Yontif as well. There's an Ochel Nefesh consideration on Yontif, but on Shabbos itself, it's going to be prohibited as a function of separation. The Gemara on Kuf Lamed Ches had a discussion whether or not it's Borer or whether it's Merakeid. But straining on Shabbos is going to be prohibited when one is doing a separation from good from bad. The Mishnah yesterday, as we went through the Mishnah already inside on Kuf Lamed Tesamud Beis, went through various types of strainings which would be okay. Meaning if you're going to be straining a liquid, but it doesn't really change the quality of the liquid, and you would have drunk the liquid in its state prior to the straining. So the Mishnah said it would be fine. The Mishnah gave a number of examples. As we are now in the Gemara, we're going to go through a number of the cases of the Mishnah, try to explicate it a little bit better, and we are up to the words of Kfifa Mitzvahs. We are describing now pouring the wine or pouring the water through basically a Kfifa. It's a type of weave made out of palm branch. So and that means to say, but you can't pick it up from the kli one tefach. Well, if you're picking up a tefach, so it's going to be an ol. We know that the measurement of an ol has to be a height of a tefach, so it's going to be an ol. So explains Rashi. Amrav hai parvanka apaga de kuve sharei kuve osar. And the Gemara now is going to continue regarding describing other activities that one does with the strainer. Some of them are going to be prohibited. Some of them are going to be permitted. Rav says that when we are putting some sort of rag on top of a jug, if you put it only halfway over, it's going to be mutter. But if you put it over its entirety, it's going to be aser. What's the difference between halfway and its entirety? So Rashi writes over here, apaga de kuva sharei delav olhu. So Rashi says it's not an ol if I'm only putting it halfway across, but if I'm putting all the way across, so then it would be an ol, would be the making of a tent. Again, over here, the making of a tent in this context over here, Rashi says it, but probably over here it is more, certainly it's an ol arai, it's not an ol kevel, that's for sure. But even in Rashi's ol arai, it's more like you're making a tent. This is not like we described the other day in terms of making a bed, in terms of making a canopy. We're just simply talking about a rag over a jug. So it may fall a little bit more under the category of uvda dechol, like we described in the other day. Amra papalo nehadik inish tinasa betuma de kuzina de chavisa mishum de mechse kemishmeres. Also, Rapapa says a person should not put any type of twigs at the end of a jar and pour the liquid through the twigs, because the twigs are going to end up serving as a strainer. Debei Rav Papa shafu shichron miman lamana. Now, in the house of Rav Papa, so what they would do is they would pour beer from one vessel to another vessel, and in doing so, they would pour it slowly, and that would keep the dregs on the bottom. So Amale Rav Achami midiftel Ravina ha'ika nitzotzos. So the Gemara says like this: what about the drops on the bottom? And to explain this a little bit better, basically here's the way we're presenting it. Like it's like Rashi, and that is that when you're pouring a liquid from a pot and you're doing so slowly, so obviously any of the sediments on the bottom is things you don't want, and it could be viewed as a separation. But here's what we're going to say for sure: the first portion that you're pouring off, so that's not separation, because in other words, this liquid's still on the bottom of the pot, and it's true that on the bottom of the pot also remains a sediment you don't want. But the truth of the matter is that you're not separating liquid from liquid, meaning the portion of liquid on the bottom is not being separated from the portion of liquid on the top. You really only say that there's an issue of borer when I am making a full separation of that which I want and that which I don't want. So when I get to the bottom of the pot, where now I have on the bottom a collection of liquid and sediment that I don't want, and then as we are now approaching the last drops of on the bottom, and now I'm slowly pouring it out, that's really when we're encountering the issue of borer. Because at that point in time, now we're separating the good from the bad. And what the Gemara now is saying is that the first portion that you pour off, even though you're doing so slowly, that's not going to be ishun a borer. It's only when you get to the bottom that's going to be an issue of borer. Okay, so the Gemara is now asking, so according to Rav Papa, but it is going to be an issue when you get to the bottom. So the Gemara says, Nitzosus lebe Rav Papa lo chashiva. So the Gemara says, look, for Rav Papa, the liquid on the bottom doesn't matter to him because, quite frankly, he doesn't get that far. Meaning, he stops before he gets to the bottom. Rav Papa, we've gone over a number of times in the Gemara, he happened to have been wealthy, he happened to have made a lot of money in beer production, and so for him, those last drops were not significant to him, he never poured out those last drops, so he never encountered a bar dilemma. So now we're talking about taking an egg and putting it through the mustard strainer. So they had, we described this mustard strainer already a couple of times, they had some sort of apparatus that was used to separate the seed from the rest of the mustard plant, and now we're just simply talking about putting an egg through it. So Tini Yaakov Karcha, so Yaakov Karcha says, as we're now turning to the top of Kuf Mem Amal, Ligavein. So why is it permitted? Because all you're doing is looking to make a discoloration. You're looking to make either the strainer or the seeds themselves a little more yellow, and that's why I'm putting the egg through. And as Rashi points out over here, yes, the strainer itself is going to separate the white and the yellow from the egg, but that's not borer. And Rashi says, because you plan on eating the white and you plan on eating the yellow. And so as a result of that, borer is only when I'm separating them because I want one and I don't want the other. Here, I want both. And so it's not borer. Itmar, we are continuing the Gemara on the top of Kuf Mem Amud Aleph. Charda Shalashu Meir Shabbos. So let's say we have the mustards and we already needed them before Shabbos. So mustard seeds, right? It's a little bit more than a condiment back in the day. Right? Nowadays, we make it more into a dip. But back in the day, so they made a mash out of their mustard seeds. And it was already kneaded up on Erev Shabbos. So what could be done on Shabbos itself with our mustard seed mash? So Lamacha Amarav Mamacha Bekli Ava Lo Biyad. So Rav is of the position that on Shabbos, what you can do is you can continue pounding it, but only using a utensil, not a hand. So Amalei Shmuel Biyad Atu Kol Yuma Mamacha Le Biyad Maichel Chamormu. So Shmuel says, I don't understand. During the week, so we do so with our hands, and it's animal food. So that means to say that according to Shmuel, it's not the way Rav presents it. Rav presents it as if it were done with the kli, so that's a shinui, and therefore on Shabbos it would be okay. If done with your hand, so that's the way it's normally done. Shmuel says that's not true. So Allah Shmuel mamachu biyad veinu mamachu b'kli. So Shmuel's of the position, no, during the week it's done with the kli, so that's considered normal, so therefore on Shabbos we need a deviation, so you deviate by doing with your hands. Itmar Rav Elazar amar echadze v'echadze aser, Rav Yochanan amar echadze v'echadze muter. And now the Amoraim weigh in on this topic of whether or not you can continue mashing your mustard seeds on Shabbos itself. Rav Elazar's position that's prohibited, Rav Yochanan's position is that's mutter, either with a clear or with a hand. Abai v'Ravi d'Amar Tavayin halacha k'Rav Yochanan. And then Abai and Rav say that the halacha is not like Rav Yochanan. And come Rav Yochanan b'shita say to Rav Elazar. Come Rav Elazar b'shita say to Shmuel. And everyone now is turning on their positions. Abai v'Amar d'Amar Tavayin halacha k'Rav Yochanan. Now Abai and Rav say that the halacha is like Rav Yochanan. We're abundantly confused by the fact that Rav Yochanan himself did in fact reverse the position. Rashi says, in all said and done, Abai and Rav are of the position of Rav Yochanan, his latter position, which is that it's going to be prohibited. Ima de Abai Abdelei velo Achel, the mother of Abaye, which we've quoted already numerous times in this Masechta, meaning the foster mother of Abaye. So she prepared it on Shabbos and Abai refused to eat it. Divasai de Ze'iri Abdelei l'Rav Chia Barashi velo Achel, the wife of Ze'iri prepared it for her husband. And he didn't eat it. Amarle, and she said, I don't understand. I prepared it for your Rebbe. He was fine with it, and you're not going to eat it. So the Amorayim are obviously at a cross in terms of whether or not this would be any kind of problem on Shabbos. What would the problem be to begin with on Shabbos? Meaning, as much as the Gemara dedicated to this topic, what exactly is the Isser? So, in other words, if it was pounded before Shabbos, so it was already nilosh, it was already needed, perhaps further doing so would be an issue of uvda dechol, perhaps. But the Gemara does not make this point abundantly clear. Am Rabba Bar Shava, hava kamina kamid de Ravina. Rabba Bar Shava says, I was in front of Ravina, vachshe le b'shufta de tuma. And so what I did is I took a garlic clove, or more like a more like the stem of the garlic, and we turned it around using that vachal and we ate it. Amar Marzucha leisilchus akochal nishmaitata. And finally, Marzucha says a halacha falls like none of the above. Eliki hadi inmar chadash shalashem erev Shabbos lamacher memachu ben biyad ben mikli venosil lesochu dvash velo yichov ela me'arev. And finally, the Gemara says that as far as the halacha is concerned, so any of that which we discussed prior, the halacha does not follow like any of that, but rather the halacha follows like the following. When you have mustard seed, and it was already pounded and kneaded before Shabbos, so on Shabbos itself, you can go ahead and continue to mash it using either your hand or using a kli. You could put in honey. You can't mix it vigorously, but me'arev. You just simply, you combine the things together, and that on Shabbos would be fine. And we talked about now mashing mustard seed. The Gemara now is going to continue discussing mashing other softer vegetables. So shechlaim, we're talking here about watercress, sheshachka me'er Shabbos, where again it was already pounded before Shabbos. Amachar nosel l'sochel. On Shabbos itself, what you can introduce into it is shemen v'chametz, both oil and vinegar. Mamshich l'sochan amita, and you can put in mint. V'lo yichov ela me'arev. And again, not a vigorous mixing, but just simply blending them together. Shum shevrisko me'er of Shabbos. Now we're talking about garlic. And again, it was already grounded before Shabbos. Lamachar nosel l'sochel. Pull the grease and v'lo yischok. So what you can do is you can add beans and other types of beans, and don't pound it together. Ela ma'arev, just simply mix it together. Umamshich es amita lasochan. And you can also add more mint. My amita nini. And as far as what is amita, so the Gemara says it is nini, which is mint. Amar Abai Shmamina Hagine Ma'alale Tachle. So the Abai says also what we're seeing over here in the halachic discussion is by virtue of the fact that we're having a halakhic discussion of adding mint into this mixture, it must mean that it's good. Otherwise, why are we discussing it from the halakhic standpoint? It must be that it has some sort of efficacious nature. Vosen anumlim b'Shabbos. And the Mishnah went on to say that on Shabbos, other types of food preparation that one could do is that one could prepare the anumlim on Shabbos. What is that? So we see now a brisa. Tana Rabbanan. Osen anumlim b'Shabbos v'enon osen alontis. So the brisa over here makes a contrast between that which you're allowed to make and that which you're not allowed to make. And obviously we need a little bit of help defining. Ezuhi anumlin, ezuhi alontis, alontis, yainu v'dashu pilpulin. Sorry, anumlin, yainu d'vashu pilpulin. So when it comes to the anumlin, so it is a combination of thicker liquids. It is wine and honey and pepper mixed in. And it is drunk. But on the other hand, alontis, yain v'shemen, I'm sorry, yain yashanu mayim tzulin v'afar simon. Now, alontis also is a natural product. It's made out of wine, older wine, and water, and afar simon. And so what exactly is it that one cannot prepare the alontis on Shabbos, but one can prepare the anumlin? They seem to be basically different types of thick drinks, almost like syrups. So the Gemara goes on to explain, to Abdelay, mesusa lemekar, lebe mesusa lemekar. Because when it comes to this second drink, which one is not allowed to prepare on Shabbos, so it is basically there to cool you down. Meaning it's not drunk as a beverage in order to enjoy, but rather it is drunk more like a therapy. Rashi writes over here, Enos in Aluntus. Rashi about 6-7 lines from the top. So Rashi writes, Enol amashket samei. It's not because people are thirsty. Elalitsanin lachar amerchatz v'dugmas refuah. People drink it down in order to cool themselves off after going to the Shvitz. And so therefore, it is more in the category of refuah than it is like a drink. Amar Rav Yosef, back to the Gemara, Rav Yosef, Zimnechada, Elisa, Basar, Mar Ukva Lebebani. One time I went with Mar Ukva to the bathhouse. Ki nafke aske asai ashkayan. And he came out, and what happened was, is that we had a drink of the saluntis. Chamer chad kasa v'chashi, mibeni derasha v'atufrei dekare. And I felt it. I felt it all the way from the tip of my head all the way down to my toes. V'yeshkan kasa achrina. Now, if I would have had a second drink of this, have mistafina dilma menaku le mizuchuse. So I'm now going to be concerned that I would have lost my zuchusta alma de aser of the olam haba. So he's happy he didn't have a second drink because he would have lost all of his zuchusim. Rashi writes over here, what does that mean? He would have lost all of his zuchusim. Menaku le mizuchuyasai. Imayisi nitzol mimenu shelo amos. Because I was afraid I was going to die. And what would require me to live would be a nes. And that nesa would require me to live, so that would take away from my zchuyos. V'hamar ukva d'shasi kol yuma. Now, the Gemara says, now he couldn't even handle a second drink. And meanwhile, Mar Ukva has one every day. But Shani Marufa, the Dash Paper, the Gemara says, yeah, because he had a tolerance. He drank it every day. You develop a tolerance for something. So developing a tolerance for something is not a new phenomena. It's already referred to here on Daf Kuf Mem in Shabbos. We are now in the middle of Kuf Mem Amud Aleph. We are continuing in our Mishnah. More about food preparation on Shabbos. Ein sharon es achiltin es achiltis beposhrim. One is not allowed to soak chiltis in warm water. The chiltis is some sort of sharp herb, sharp vegetable. Rashi says it in a lot of different languages, none of which I'm familiar with. Rashi describes how it says it in Arabic. Rashi says it in Old French. Anyway, but the part of the Rashi that I do understand is the end of the Rashi, where Rashi writes the first Rashi in the Mishnah. Visharno so beposhim vishosin osan hamayim lirifua. So what happens is that you put this very sharp root in water, in warm water, and it's, generally speaking, it's drunk as a refuah. And so, even though it's a drink, but it is generally done for refuah, and therefore it's going to be prohibited on Shabbos, and that's why the Mishnah says, Ein shorin es achiltus beposhim, one's not allowed to do so on Shabbos. Avanosin lesoch hachometz, but what you can do is you can put it in vinegar. And apparently when put in vinegar, so that's something which is more normal behavior. On top of that, one is not allowed to soak the karshinim. The karshinim are animal fodder. Someone is not allowed to clean it off. One is allowed to put it into the kivra. The kivra now is a sieve, which on Shabbos itself, generally speaking, is used for separation, which obviously is going to be prohibited. However, what the Mishnah is teaching us is that if I'm just using the kavra as a way of moving it from point A to point B, so that would be fine. You can put it in a basket. One is not allowed to take the straw and put it in the kavra, and don't put it on a high place, meaning where there's a slope, in order so that it will separate. But one is allowed to put it in the kavra, and one is allowed to put it in the trough for the animal. But to do acts of separation on Shabbos is going to be prohibited. Just using it as a kli in of itself is going to be permitted. The fact that you put it in the kavra and there will be some separation occurring in the kavra, but that's not your intention. So Rashi over here addresses Rashi on the last Rashi in the Mishnah. Aval notu bekavra lita mitzocha avos va'af apisha hamotz nofel. So let's say I'm just using the kavra as a means of transporting. And it's true that while this straw is in the kavra, so there will be separation occurring between the parts that are good and the parts not good. So that is me'elav, says Rashi, that's happening on its own. And k'Rabbi Shimon dama dav shem miskaven mutter. And our mission over here subscribes to the sheet of Rabbi Shimon that we've discussed throughout this masechta that a dav shem miskaven is going to be mutter. And this is something unintentional. And we're going to have to add, of course, that it is something which is not a psik resha. Otherwise, Rabbi Shimon would not agree in such a situation. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the Mishnah, I bai lehu. Kuf mem amud aleph, immediately after the Mishnah, we start with the Gemara, sharamai. So, the drinking of this chiltos potion is going to be prohibited on Shabbos because it's a refuah. But if you go back to the Mishnah and read it carefully, the Mishnah even talks about even just soaking the chiltos in the warm water, which the Mishnah says you're not allowed to do. Now, the simple explanation of the Mishnah is that you're not allowed to do it because you're not allowed to end up drinking it. But what the Gemara's assumption right now is that there's something wrong with the soaking process in of itself. It is somehow a violation of Shabbos, and that's why the Gemara is now about to ask, well, how are we violating Shabbos? Ibailuhu, sharamai. So what happens when you do soak it? Meaning, what iser is there? So Tirgama Rav Ada, Narsha, Kamed Rav Yosef, Shara Chayv Chata. So the Gemara says that one is in violation of an iser de araisa. Now, the challenge over here is that as much as he is strong in his position, he doesn't explain his position, meaning what exactly would be the issue over here? Is this perhaps an issue of leisha? Is one needing? If one is putting more than just a little bit of chiltus in and they're binding with one another, perhaps that's an understanding of it. But quite frankly, it is at this point in time challenging to understand which Isser D'Oraisa are we talking about? Which malacha are we talking about? And Rashi also does not help in terms of identifying which malacha we're talking about. So Abai says, well, let's think about this. Let's say I took a piece of meat and I soaked it in water. And so you want to tell me that one is violating an Isser D'Oraisa de Mechayev? meaning which malacha are we talking about? So as much as we're struggling to understand the shita of Rav Ada, so Abaye also is having a tremendous difficulty understanding which malacha we're talking about. So Elam Rabbi Midrabban Shalay Asekaderchu Osebechom. So Abaye says no. Putting the chiltis in the warm water, this is what it falls under the category of uvda dechol. This seems to be the theme of our perek, that activities which do not have necessarily a particular malacha, or that the chachamim gave cause for the chachamim to forbid it on Shabbos, nevertheless, it is viewed, generally speaking, as a weekday activity. It's not a Shabbosic activity, and therefore falls under this general category of uvda dechol. And so Abaye says that's what we're describing over here in terms of why one is not allowed to soak the chiltis in the warm water on Shabbos. Vaymine Rav Yochanan, May Rebbe Yana Ma Lashros as a chiltis bitzonei. How about soaking in cold water? So in other words, the Mishnah actually is very clear in that the prohibition is only soaking it in warm water, but what about cold water? Amale Aser. So he says it's going to be prohibited. Va'anan Tanan ain't showing as a chiltis bitposhin. So the Gemara says, yeah, but our Mishnah says warm water, and the Diuk is pretty clear. So Abitzonei Mutter. So that means to say then that the implication of the Mishnah is that in cold water would be okay. And isn't that a simple way to read the Mishnah and infer from the Mishnah? Amar Lei, to which he was very offended because Rav Yochanan asked the question from Rav Yanai. Rav Yanai gives an answer and Rav Yochanan says, yeah, but what about the Mishnah? So Rav Yanai says, Amar Lei in ke ma bein li v'lach. What's the difference between me and you? Meaning you're asking me a question of how to understand the Mishnah. I'm telling you what the Mishnah means. And now you want to come back at me? Look, obviously, I have a Masorah in terms of how to understand the Mishnah. And if you're asking me the question, I'm giving you the answer. And if you're not accepting my answer, so then don't ask me to begin with. So Masnitzin Yechidahi. And the Gemara and Rav Yana goes on to explain, look, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, the Mishnah is a Das Yachid. Ditanya, and how do I know the Mishnah is a Das Yachid? Because I have a Braisa. And Sharon is a Chiltus, Lobacham and Belobitsonin, here in the Braisa. The Tanakhama says that one is not allowed to soak the chiltis, not in hot water, not in cold water. Rav Yossi Omer Becham and also Betzonim Mutter. Rav Yossi says that in hot water would be prohibited and in cold water would be Mutter. So, in the Braisa, what is clear is that our mission over here is only reflecting the viewpoint of Rav Yossi, but meanwhile, the Tanakhama, the Das Rabim, the consensus position is against Rav Yossi, and that's exactly what Rav Yana's point is. Lamai Abdulay. The Gemara now wants to know, with this drink, why, generally speaking, do people imbibe? Liyukra Deliba, the Gemara goes on to explain. It has to do with the fact that a person has, quote-unquote, a heavy heart, congestion, whatever, however we're going to diagnose it, and as a result of that, this alleviates. Rav Acha Bar Yosef Chash B'Yukra Deliba, and Rav Acha Bar Yosef, in fact, was suffering from this symptom. Also, the comment of Marufa Amalei Zoshasi Talse Tikle Chiltasa Betalsa Yome, and so he went to Marufa. Marufa gave him a prescription, 3 days that he's going to be drinking this. Azal Ishte Chamsha B'Shabbos. He started now his regimen on Thursday. Malei B'Shabbos day two now Friday. Obviously, we know where we're going. Litzafra Azal Shal Be Midrasha. Now. He went and he asked the question in the Beis Medrash. Amrlei Tana debei Rav Ada v'Amrlei Tana debei Mar bar Rav Ada shosa Adam kavo kabayim ve'eno choshesh. What do you mean? You drink of it. You drink a kav of it. You drink 2 kav of it, and eno choshesh, and you do not concern yourself. Amrlehu lishtos lo kamibayle. No, I'm not asking if I'm allowed to drink it. Ki kamibayle lishros mai. I'm asking if I'm allowed to prepare it. Meaning we already established that preparing it on Shabbos itself is going to be prohibited, falling under the category of Uvda Dechol, but now I am in day 3 of a 3-day regimen, and I already started on Thursday, and I already continued on Friday, and now, here, I obviously should have prepared it before Shabbos, I didn't. My question is, can I prepare it on Shabbos? Amlu Rav Chia Bar Avin B'Didi Hava Uvda V'Asei Shilte L'Rav Acha Bar Ava V'Lo Hava B'Yadei. So he says, look, I experienced the same thing, and I didn't, and I went to ask Rav Ada Ba'ava, and he didn't know. Also, Shilta L'Rav Huna, V'amehachi Kama Rav, and this goes all the way back to Rav, which is, Shari B'Sonin Aminiach B'Chama, that what you're allowed to do is you're allowed to soak it in cold water, and Aminiach B'Chama, and you can then leave it in the sun in order so that it heat up a little bit, and that is something which is allowed to be done over here for our 3rd day of regimen. Now, Kaman Deshari, now the Gemara now wants to know, this psak that was given by Rav, Is it within the sheet of Rabbi Yossi? We've already just established that this is a machlokis hatanayim, whether or not one could soak it in cold water. Rabbi Yossi says yes, and the Chachamim say no. Is this Psak of Rav only working within the sheet of Rabbi Yossi? The Gemara says no. No, it's working even within the sheet that says that it's Aser. Hanimile hechadolo, ishte klal, avahacha kevin di ishte chamsha, umale shabsa, ilo shasi b'shabbos mistake. And over here, the reason why it would be allowed on Shabbos is because you are now day three on a three-day regimen. And the Gemara is assuming that when you are on a three-day regimen of this particular treatment, so then when you get to day number three, not taking on day number three would pose a sakana. Now, if we're talking about sakanas nefashos, so then the truth of the matter is we don't need a chiddush over here to allow taking it and preparing it on Shabbos. The word sakana over here probably means that it would be dangerous, not from a critical standpoint, but dangerous still in that it would compromise your health. And so therefore, a certain allowance is given on day three where one can go ahead and both prepare it in cold water and even heat it up a little bit in the sun. Comes out over here, right? The obvious takeaway from the Gemara is that if one starts a regimen and then one going into Shabbos, one can continue the regimen on Shabbos itself. Antibiotics obviously being the best example of this. But anyway, it comes out from that in the Gemara. But meanwhile, let's also keep in mind that what we are looking to violate over here are quote unquote some of the more flexible halachas within Shabbos, i.e. uvda dechol. So again, certainly one can draw conclusions, but at the same time, also just got to be sensitive to what the issues are at hand. Continuing the Gemara, we're towards the bottom of Kuf Mem Amud Aleph, and Mistamech Valzer Rav Acha Bar Yosef Akatfe the Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Bar Achte, and so Amoraim are walking together. Rav Acha Bar Yosef is on the shoulders of Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, who happens to be the son of his sister. Amalei ki matinu lebe Rav Safra Ailina ki, and when we get to the house of Rav Safra, so help me in. Ki matu Ailei, and they brought him in. By mine, malas lechaskuske kitnasa b'Shabbos. So over here now, moving the discussion over here to the following: can one go ahead and rub linen on Shabbos? Now the rubbing of linen on Shabbos accomplishes one of two things. Explains Rashi. One is that what it's going to do is that it's going to soften the linen. Softening the linen on Shabbos is not a violation of Shabbos. It does not serve as a malacha. Also, rubbing the linen is also going to make it a little bit brighter, a little bit whiter. Now, that is a malacha on Shabbos, and that's what's called libun. And so over here, the question becomes the following. When you're rubbing the linen on Shabbos, would that be okay? So, l'rechuche kitnusa kamechavim v'shapir dami, is your true intention over here just simply to soften it? Odilma ulude chivra kamechavim v'asar, or is your real intention to whiten it, which would be a violation of libun. Now, over here, when we're talking about what your true intention is, so what about the secondary consequence that comes out of from it? So, once again, we hit this topic of a davar she'eino miskaven. It's something which you're not intended. But if the whitening comes out anyway, so then it would fall under the category of psik resha. And then the next point, which, again, we've gone over time and again, but still, once you get the rules down, you understand where this discussion always leads to. Well, if the secondary consequence is inevitable, but it's something that you really don't regard, so now it falls under the category of a davar she'eino miskaven, which is a psik resha, but it is either lo nichale or lo echpale, which also may be grounds to be more meko. So again, we keep coming on to these types of cases. So here, when we're talking about now the rubbing of the linen, so what's your true intention? What really are you not, which consequence are you not interested in? Amar lei, l'rechucha kamechavim v'shaper dami. So his response is that really the true intention is to soften it, and so therefore it would be okay. Kinafik asay amalei my by marmine. What was the question that was asked? Amalei by mine malach sasuche kinasa b'shabbos. And he wanted to go over exactly what the discussion was, and he told him the discussion was rubbing the linen. Va'amalei shaper dami. He told me that it was okay. V'tibaylei lamar sudra. So he says okay, but meanwhile, why don't you ask about a handkerchief? And sudra lo kami baylei. You see, he says no, a handkerchief. I knew the answer by handkerchief. Dabaymei Ravuno Pashili. I asked Ravuno, he told me. V'tip sholei lamar misudra. So he says, oh, why don't you conclude from the handkerchief? So, and what's clear is that the answer that he got regarding the handkerchief is that one's not allowed to rub the handkerchief on Shabbos. And so once you know you're not allowed to rub the handkerchief on Shabbos, so then what's the difference between rubbing the handkerchief and rubbing the linen? So the Gemara says, Amarle hasam mechze ki yulu dechivra, hachalo mechze ki yulu dechivra. And he says there's a difference between the two. and using Rashi now to help understand the Gemara, Ulu de Chivra, Rashi writes, I'm sorry, last Rashi on the Amud, Hasam Michzik Ulu de Chivra, Shemakbid Alivuno, Vitsihuro, Shelsudar Yoser Mikinasa. When it comes to the handkerchief now, I don't know fashion of my 4th century Bavel very well. But the point is that the handkerchief was there on a much more exposed portion of the body, meaning it was there more for aesthetics, and people were interested in having a white handkerchief. And so when a person was rubbing his handkerchief, his true intention was to whiten it, and therefore that's going to be a violation of Shabbos. However, when it comes to the kitna, the linen, so the linen was more of an undergarment. I'm not professing that I really know where it was worn, but it was more like an undergarment. And really the true intention over there of rubbing it is just simply to soften it. So he says, I can see a very clear difference between the rubbing of the handkerchief versus the rubbing of the linen. Am Rav Chista Haiki Nasa, as we now turn to the top of the Amud Beis. Mishafali today, Mikan Yashare, Kanya Mimenu, Aser. Taking it off the hanger. Taking the linen garment off the hanger. So one can take the linen garment off the hanger, but not take the hanger away from the linen garment. Now I say hanger, and it's not really doing justice in terms of explaining the Gemara, because the hanger, obviously, the ones we use are not muksa, because they were obviously designed, they were built as a utensil to hold the clothing. When we're describing hangers over here, we're really describing a twig, some sort of stick. And so, if not actually designed as a hanger, so then what you have really, or what you're looking at over here, is a muksa issue. And so therefore, if your shirt is hanging on a stick, you can take the shirt off the stick, because the shirt obviously is a non-muksa item. But to take the stick away from the shirt, well, the stick is a muksa item if it wasn't set aside for that. Rashi writes on the top of the Amud, the lo chazal totule de la hasakakai. The twig was meant as firewood, and so even though, yes, right now it happens to be being used as a makeshift hanger, but really it is still just a stick, and therefore it is muksa, fine. But certainly to take the shirt off the stick, that would be fine. Amar Rava, the im kli kavai hu mutar. If, let's say, it happens to be a stick designed as a hanger, so then it's going to be mutar. Rashi writes, it has Torah's kli alav. Obviously, now it's designed as a kli. Amar Rav Chista, haikishta diyarka, ichazi lamelcha behem ashar letutule ve'ilav aser. So if I have this types of vegetables, which, again, not edible by humans, but could be edible by animals if it was designed to be eaten by animals. So then, obviously, it's not muksa, because you are allowed to, and if it's your animals, supposed to feed your animals. But, however, if it's not going to be eaten by animals, so then it's going to be aser, meaning it's going to be muksa. Amrav chia barashi, amrav haitili de bisra, shalatatule de kavre de aser. If I have, let's say, a string of raw meat, so that is not going to be muksa. So back in the day, even raw meat was consumed in its raw state, and therefore it's not muksa. However, kavre, if it's made up of fish, it's going to be usr. Raw fish was not consumed. Okay. Amar Rav Kitina. And now we're continuing in the Gemara. So the Gemara now is going to be moving and shifting topics just a little bit, as we're going to be moving the discussion over here from that of halacha to that of advice that is going to be given. A number of issues are going to be discussed over here in the course of this, of the etzos that are given within the Gemara, ranging in topics all the way to intimacy. And Rav Chista is going to, generally speaking, be the disseminator of this advice. We are continuing. We're on Kuf Mem Amud Beis. We are now, as the lines start to get wide. Am Rav Kitina. Am Rav Kitina Omid Be'em Tzaminta Ki'ilu Omid Be'kreso She'isha. So, let's say you are sleeping in a bed. It happens to be that this bed belongs already to a married couple. And you're in the center of the bed, so the Gemara says it's like standing on the woman herself, meaning it's just simply inappropriate to be in such a bed. But the Gemara says, v'lav milsi. But the Gemara says, truth of the matter is that there really is no problem in doing so. The Gemara just simply considered that there's a problem in doing so. But the Gemara ends up concluding it would be fine. V'amar Rav Chista. And here now we begin. I counted 13 different pieces of advice that are given from Rav Chista in terms of general conduct. And again, the topic's going to vary. So when you're buying a vegetable, so you should make sure to buy longer sticks of vegetables, meaning that they were bundled, and the number of them that were bundled together were always the same. So make sure to get the most for your money. Okay, nice, simple life advice. And so therefore, make sure they get the vegetables that are bundled, that are the longer stem version. You're going to get more for your money. Kisha kikisha, v'urka mimela. So the as far as the thickness of the bundle is concerned, it's the same. So then look for the length, because then you're just simply going to get more. Amr chista, here comes a second. Barbe rav dezavin kanya lizmen ariche. Also, when you're buying a bundle of reeds, same story. Get the long ones. Tuna kituna, v'urka mimela. So it's bundled the same number of sticks together, number of reeds together. And so therefore, the longer ones that you get, the more you're going to get. Amr of chista, barbe rav delo nefisha le rifta. If, let's say, a young Talmud Chacham does not have a lot of bread, i.e. he's poor, lo lechol yarka, mishum degarit, don't eat a lot of vegetables. Back in the day, vegetables were an appetizer, meaning they actually increase your appetite. Right? The Seder is built on this premise, where you open up the Seder with a vegetable in order to encourage the appetite. And then, of course, we go right to Magid. But vegetables encourage the appetite, and Rav Chista says, look, if you don't have a lot of food, don't encourage the appetite. Amr Rav Chista ano lo ba'ani yisi achli arke. Rav Chista himself reports that when he was poor, so he did not eat vegetables, v'lo ba'atirasa achli arke. And even when he was wealthy, he didn't eat vegetables. Ba'ani yisi mishum degarir. Now, when he was poor, he didn't eat vegetables, because, again, it was the appetite, and he didn't want his appetite to be encouraged. He didn't have a lot to eat. But when he was wealthy, he says, what am I going to do? I'm going to eat vegetables. Do you know what could be right there where the vegetables are? There could be a piece of meat. There could be a piece of fish. Why would I be eating vegetables if I, in fact, could eat meat, or if I can eat fish? Some people really relate to the statement of Rav Chista. Amr Rav Chista, barbe rav delo nefishi le rifta lo lifse betsuye. So let's say a person does not have a lot of barbe rav, a young Talmud Chacham, not particularly wealthy. So lo lifse betsuye. So don't eat small little bite-sized pieces of bread. What you should do is basically you should save the small pieces of bread until you have enough for a respectable meal. So basically, what to do with a limited resource of bread? Don't nibble, but rather conserve, and then have a good meal. Amr Rav Chista bar Rav Delo Nefishi Le Rifta Lo Livtza. And another halacha regarding bread, and a Talmud Chacham. Talmud Chacham does not have a lot, and now he is making the motzi. He shouldn't be the one making the motzi. My Talmud Delo Aved Be'ayin Yafa. We saw this in the 7th Perek of Brachos. And the reason why is because when he's now coming time to distribute, because of his lack of means, so he's just simply not used to giving generous pieces to people. And so therefore, if he's the one making motzi, he will not be handing out generous pieces to people. He's going to be worried about his own self-preservation, understandably. And so the Gemara says, so he should not be the one making motzi. Am Rav Chista, anami karlo hava bitsana. When I was poor, I would not be the one breaking the bread. Ad deshare yad bikula mana. So I had to examine the entire basket. And I wanted to make sure that there was enough for the entire meal. Am Rav Chista Haiman de Efshele Lamechel Nam de Sar Vachel de Chite. A person, let's say, could basically make do with barley bread. Barley bread was an inferior type of bread. The Gemara says repeatedly throughout Shas, and generally speaking, wasn't even generally consumed by humans. But anyway, certainly qualitatively inferior. And Rav Chista says that, let's say, a person can get away with it, meaning, okay, he's fine with it. And meanwhile, he goes and he spends the money on wheat bread. So kavra mishum bal tashkis. That's bal tashkis. He's wasting. He's not being frugal. And Rav Chista over here is talking about the importance of being frugal. And if you could do with less, so then don't have more. The amar Rav Papa Haiman de esher lemishtei shichur v'shasei charmei over mishum bal tashkis. Rav Papa, our beer maker. So we saw earlier this morning. So Rav Papa says the same thing regarding drinking as well. If let's say you can drink beer and instead you decide to drink wine, and again it's costly to go ahead and drink wine, and meanwhile you can do with beer. So then once again you're in violation of Baltashkis. You had a chance of being frugal, you weren't frugal, and the Gemara says you're in violation of Baltashkis. V'lav milsi. But the Gemara says on both of these points, however, there's a counter consideration, which is Baltashkis degufa adif. So the Gemara says yes, being frugal is important. It's a value. At the same time, however, if the wheat bread is better for your body than the barley bread, so then there's baltashkes de gufo. Then you have to think about your own body. And the same thing regarding wine and beer. If wine is a better consideration for your body, so then yes, it's going to cost more, but then there's also baltashkes de gufo. So the Gemara simply says, yes, being frugal is important, but also taking care of yourself is also important. So there is obviously a multiple considerations. Amar Rav Chista Bar Rav Delesle Mishcha. Let's say a Dyan Tamar Chacham does not have oil. And back in the day, the oil was used at the end of the meal to clean your hands. So Nimshi B'mai Decharitze. So basically, use some sort of substitute. It's water with pits. The pits are going to it's going to leak out a little bit of oil into the water. Okay, it's what you're going to have to do to make do. Amar Chisa Bar Be'rav Dezavin Umsa Lizben Unka. So if, let's say, a young Talmud Chacham who, again, is short on funds, if he's going to buy meat, so make sure to buy the piece of the animal that is right next to the neck, or by the neck. Di'isbei Tlasa Mina Bisra. The Gemara describes it as having three different cuts of meat. So it's got lean meat, it's got tough, it's got tough portions, it's got a little bit of fat in it. So it's really a composite of three different types. So that is where, even though it's just a couple of dollars that he has, but meanwhile it's going to go a long way in terms of him giving him multiple sensations from the meat. Amar Chisa Bar Be'rav Dezavin Kitunisa Lizben Mindhar Abba. So, Midanahar Abba. So let's say you have a Talmud Chacham who, again, is now buying clothing and resources are limited. So what is he going to do? So he's going to buy a linen garment and he makes sure to get it from this place called Nahar Abba. The Rashi writes that the linen that comes from there is a really good quality. V'nichvera kol tasin yomei. Make sure to whiten it every 30 days. D'mefatulei treser yachishasa. And it basically, it's going to last a year. The Ana Arva. And here Rav Chisda says, I'm going to personally guarantee this advice. Okay? What exactly does a personal guarantee mean in terms of financial responsibility over here? Obviously, he's not talking about future generations. That would be very challenging. But nevertheless, though, in terms of care and maintenance of the clothing, if you follow his instructions, so he feels that you will be guaranteed that you will get the results that you want. My Kitunisa. The Gemara does this all the time, and that is wants to understand the etymology of a word. What is the word kitunisa? So kitana'e. It means basically that you're in a good group. Meaning you see somebody wearing a garment like that. So basically, it's somebody that you want to be a friend with. Amar Chisa Bar Be'rav Lalesev Atipasa Charata. A young Talmud Chacham should not be sitting on a mat. On a mat that is brand new. It's got a lot of sharp edges to it. You sit down on it, it's going to ruin your clothing. The Gemara says exactly that. The Mechle Manye. It's going to basically just tear up your clothing. So again, you got to be careful. If you are limited in funds, make sure to take care of yourself, take care of your clothing. Amar Rav Chisa Bar Be'rav Dololishtar Manye Lu Shpeza Lechiverle. A young Talmud Chacham should not be handing over his clothing to his innkeeper, right? Back in the day when they were learning in yeshivas, back in the day. This continues to this very day. So nowadays we have dormitories, but back in the day, so they had various people hosting. And when you're staying by somebody's house and they're hosting you, so don't hand your clothing over to the missus of the house in order so that it should be clean for you. Talav arech ara, because that's not proper. Demachazebei. Midi v'asel lemigne. Because what's going to happen is that if you ask somebody else to do your clothing, they're going to find something on your clothing, and it will be embarrassing. And Rashi says over here that there may be some balkari on the clothing, and it will just simply be embarrassing for everyone to see that. So basically, the advice given by Rav Chisda is for the Talmud Chacham to wash their own clothing. Amalu Rav Chisda Lebanase. Rav Chisda now is going to be speaking to his daughters, and now he's going to be giving advice to his very own daughters. You should be modest in front of your husbands. Don't eat bread in front of your husbands. Rashi says, because you may end up eating too much, and you're just simply not, you're going to look unattractive in front of your husbands. You should not be eating vegetables at night. Rashi says, it leads to bad breath, and once again, he's instructing his daughters, he's helping advise his daughters in terms of remaining attractive to their husbands. Lo techla tamre belaila. Don't eat dates at night. Rashi says that it will lead to flatulence. Velo tishton shikhr belaila. Not drinking beer at night. Same issue. Velo tifnin hechad demifnan gavreichu. And also, don't use the same outhouse that your husband is using. Again, that would be just simply unattractive if your husband and you are sharing the same outhouse. So v'chi kakari abava inish, and when a man is knocking at the door, lo timun manu. Don't answer the door by saying, who is it now? What's wrong with saying, who is it? So you're using it in the masculine form, and you're giving off the impression that you are conversing with men all the time. So you shouldn't talk in such a manner, but rather, ela mani. Just simply say, who is it, and use the feminine form. And so, just get used to the idea, and your speech should be in a manner in which you don't normally talk to other men. And Rav Chisda continues to give advice to his daughters in terms of intimacy. And in the course of intimacy between husband and wife, so Marganitza Bechadiyade and Kura Bechadiyade, and this is a reference to the private parts of a woman. The Marganitza is a reference to her top, and the Kura is a reference to the bottom. Marganitza Achvelu, the Kura Lo Achvelu Admitstaren, the Hadar Achvelu, and is very specific in terms of exactly the order in which it should be presented to her husband. And yes, this is in terms of Tashmish Amita, is in terms of intimacy. And the Gemara over here obviously is not shy about giving such information. Certainly takeaway points from the Gemara over here is that when marrying off your children, should speak it out with your children, talk to your children before they get married. But in other words, but clearly, this advice is to be, in fact, not shunned, but rather shared between parents and children. And finally, we're going to finish up to the Mishnah. And that is that we are going to be talking about soaking the karshinim. So the Mishnah says the various types of activities that one has to do with the animal food, things that you can do, things that you cannot do. Soaking it is going to be problematic because you're separating the good from the bad. However, the Mishnah goes on to say the using of a sieve. And the Mishnah taught us, this is now going all the way back to the Amud Aleph of today's daf, the Mishnah taught us that if you're using the sieve, so if you're just using so as a means of transport, so that would be fine, even though as you're transporting in the sieve itself, so it's going to be separation occurring, but the Mishnah says that's a dav shein miskaven, and therefore it's going to be mutter. The Masis and Deloki Aitana, the Gemara simply quotes a brisa that is not in agreement with our Mishnah. The Tanya Valentin and brisa, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Ein Mashkichen Bekavra Kol Ikar. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that one is not allowed to use a kavra at all. One has to use some other utensil in order to transport it from one to another, but not to use a kavra. Perhaps Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov follows the Veshita of Rabbi Yehuda, that's the Devashet Miskaven, and it's going to be Usher. That's a possibility. I'm saying that. Rashi does not say that. Anyway, now gives us an excellent time to recap our daf. We're going to stop here at the Mishnah. And tomorrow we're going to start with the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuf Mem Amud Beis. We spoke this morning about various types of strainers. Some are okay, some are not okay. The basic idea is that if the straining is actually separating the good from the bad, so then obviously that is a tolada of borer, and that is going to be an isser on Shabbos. If, however, the straining itself is not creating any kind of separation of good or bad, so therefore it's going to be okay. In the beginning of Shir this morning, we talked about using a wicker basket. We talked about putting a cover over half the lid. We spoke of the pouring beer from one slowly from one jar to another jar, allowing the dregs to remain on the bottom. If all that's remaining on the bottom are just the dregs, so that's an act of separation. If, however, you're leaving some of the liquid in the bottom of the pot, so that's not an act of separation. So those are the types of straining that we spoke about in the beginning of Shir. We spoke very briefly about putting the egg through the mustard strain on Shabbos. You're going to end, even though it's going to end up separating the white from the yellow, but you're going to eat both, and so therefore this also doesn't constitute borer. The Gemara spoke on the Amud Aleph of today's daf, Kuf Mem Amud Aleph, about mashing mustard seeds and watercress and garlic on Shabbos, where it was already mashed before Shabbos, and now all you're doing is just simply pounding it out a little bit more, adding a little bit of oil. The Gemara says all this is okay, but just not to vigorously mix it together. Anumlim and alontis. Two different types of mixtures of beverages. The anumlim you're allowed to make, the alontis you're not allowed to make. And we went through both. The alontis is, generally speaking, drunk for purposes of refuah. Continuing, we then saw a Mishnah on Kuf Mem Amud Aleph in the middle. In terms of other types of food preparation, making the chiltis and poshrim is going to be prohibited. But putting it into the vinegar, that's going to be fine. and in terms of what exactly to, how exactly to handle the animal fodder on Shabbos. What is there exactly in soaking the chiltus in warm water? So the Gemara was not clear. The Gemara first suggested it was an issur d'oraisa, but the Gemara concluded that it's not, it's uvda d'chol. It falls under this category of, it's a weekday activity. The Gemara talked about the chiltus, taking the chiltus as the end of a regimen, where you already took it on Thursday and Friday, and it was a three-day prescription. And so, are you allowed to take it on Shabbos? The answer was yes. Are you allowed to prepare it on Shabbos? And the Gemara's answer is, with a shinui, but the answer is yes. And again, I caution all of us, with the issur that we're talking about is uvda d'chol. So the best we got from our Gemara is that one is allowed to conclude a regimen on Shabbos, some sort of medical regimen, but only, not only, but as far as the Gemara is concerned, the allowance only extended to uvda d'chol. Rubbing linen was the last topic on the Amud Aleph that we discussed. Is one allowed to rub linen on Shabbos? If the primary purpose is to soften it, then it would be fine. If the primary purpose is to whiten it, so then it's not going to be fine. The Gemara's conclusion is that primarily it's to soften it, and so therefore one is allowed to rub the linen. On the top of the Amud Beis, we went through an assortment of muksa issues, the hangers and the shirts, and not hangers, but really sticks. And so if the shirt is hanging on a stick and the stick was not prepared before Shabbos as a hanger, so now it's just a stick and it's muksa. Certainly taking the shirt off the stick is fine. Removing the stick from the shirt is not fine, is not acceptable. And so the Gemara went into a couple of muksa-related topics. And then for the remainder of the Amud Beis, from basically the first wide line up into the Mishnah where we got to, so various pieces of advice, mostly by Rav Chista. I count a total of 13 pieces of advice that was given by Rav Chista. And by the way, my count does not include the advice that he gave to his own daughters. But anyway, 13 pieces of advice that were given to Rav Chista. Generally speaking, topics of what happens when a person does not have any means or has very limited means. How should a person live frugally? And other such type advice that was given. And then Rav Chista also gave advice to his own daughters in terms of how to maintain a healthy relationship with their husbands. Adkan, that takes us to the end. Tomorrow we start with the Mishnah.